Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go.
Hello and welcome to another episode from the Irish Photography Podcast. I'm your host, John Myler, again, and I am delighted to be joined by my good friend, Dermot O'Donovan. Hi, Dermot.
Hey, buddy. How are you keeping?
How are you doing? I'm good, thanks. And Dermot, we are normally joined by our other good pal, Darren, but Darren's still away on his Falls expedition, as he calls it. And he's getting on very, very well. I've seen a couple of shots there he sent us during the week. So he looks like he's having a ball. But unfortunately, he can't join us tonight. So it's just the two of us again. So anything strange with you?
Not much, nobody. We missed Darren a wee bit now, all right. It's the second week in a row, but we look forward to having him back next week. And I'm sure a lot of listeners are looking forward to hearing the Corkman once again. So, yeah, Darren, come on back, buddy.
I'm looking forward to hearing how he's getting on and talking about the shots that he's shared with us. But, Dermot, moving on. The reason I asked you how are you doing, anything strange, because our second topic today, we are going to talk about the last photograph we've taken this weekend. Okay. Now, I have an idea where you were, and I'm looking forward to that. But before we get on to that topic, I want to chat really briefly about the importance of composition in photography. And we can look at it from a landscape point of view or architectural or anything else. But why is composition so important? Why do you think it's important, Dermot?
Because it makes or breaks a photograph. It's very, very simple. Like, I know there's certain rules, and some rules are supposed to be broken, and some are not meant to be broken. But it's not just for landscape and a few little other things, but I think it's imperative for portrait photography also. I mean, like, if you can't place the eyes of your subject matter in the proper place in a photograph, it's especially as a wedding photographer, you can just bin it if it's not. You know, it's very kind of hard place to get your photograph compositional wise, especially with a portrait. Yep. I think it's much harder. Whereas in landscape photography, you kind of just think, oh, I put the main subject up and this here, 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 or here. That's what it kind of mostly goes with. But there's not just the normal kind of compositional thing. There's loads of them to do, and I'm sure we're going to touch base on a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. There's a number of, as you said, there's a number of rules we could follow. But the one thing, I suppose, from my own personal experience, when I started out doing photography, I did follow a few rules just to help me to get to understand how to create an image and how to bring the viewer's eye through to an image. But over the years of photographing, particularly in the landscape, I also came to learn that those rules, it's very important that you can break those rules as well. And I have broken the rules so many times, and I've come up with some cracking images. So although the rules are there to be a guideline, they're also there to be broken. And as I said, when we break them, it really, really helps. But I'm going to list through 10, I suppose, 8 to 10 rules that I would follow generally. And we might touch on them, both of us, as I scan through them, Dermot. But the first one being the rule of thirds, I think it's one that a lot of photographers would be aware of. And anybody starting out in the photography journey, I would recommend understanding the rule of thirds. Do you agree?
Wholeheartedly, I would definitely 100% agree with you there, John. Rule of thirds is the more simple of the compositions to follow. But yes, exactly. It's the one that is often most thrown in the bin, if that makes any
sense.
Yeah,
true. And I find now when I'm taking a shot that, like, I don't use the grids on my viewfinder or on my live screen. But I kind of see it in my head, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely.
Look through the viewfinder.
So you're right in what you say. Do you know, you kind of see it in your head. But I still use the grid lines. So, like, for our listeners, people that just don't know, is that there's going to be two horizontal lines coming down your screen at a 30 each way. And then there's going to be two lines horizontally. Did I say horizontally twice? Vertical.
Vertical, horizontal. Two vertical lines, two horizontal.
And there is called, where the lines meet each other are called intersecting points. So they're the most, yes, or hotspots, as it's also known as. So a way to describe your typical landscape is always have, first and foremost, sorry, no, I have to slot in here.
I know what you're going to say.
To have your horizon line straight.
I knew you were going to say that.
I am, because it's a pet hate of mine, John, and I still to this day see very, very good photographers still not doing it right, and it drives me gaga. Yeah. And like, I don't want to name any names because I'll end up getting in a fight with someone, but like, I know a person that posted a photograph last night, and that person is a very, very good photographer. But when they posted that photograph last night online on Facebook, it was crooked, and it drove me mad. It actually drove me mad. I don't know why.
And I think sometimes that the people make that mistake is when they have a number of elements in the photograph, and you might get excited when you're editing a photograph, but you're just, it's an oversight of balancing out leveling out your horizon. And
yeah,
I've done it myself, but do you know what? To give myself some credit, I don't do it very often. Because yes, it does make or break an image having a crooked horizon.
Yeah.
But just for those who are listening, you said the two vertical lines and two horizontal lines, that gives you 9 equal segments when you're looking through your viewfinder and your LCD screen. And like that, if you were taking a photograph, say of, I don't know, a lighthouse, you might keep the lighthouse on to the right of the screen where the lines intersect and so on. So you have a bit of space to the left and so on. But you know, do you know your famous shot, your 2 mile gate shot?
Yeah.
Yeah. You like, there's an image that we keep straight down the middle.
Correct.
Yeah.
Broke the rules.
Okay. Broke the rules, but we're adding in another rule there, because when we keep that in the middle, the jetty is the leading line bringing us out.
Correct.
So we're focusing on our leading lines in that photograph. So if the listener can imagine, you have a jetty right in the middle of your screen with like a T at the top. You know, your leading line is bringing you out, but you're breaking the rule of thirds by putting the main subject in the center of the image. So it's there to be broken, and it can work very, very well. A couple of other rules that I would use is balancing the elements. So you might place your main subject off center, as with the rule of thirds, and create a more interesting photo, but it can leave a void in the scene which can make it feel a bit empty. So you can achieve a balanced composition out of the main subject's visual weight by including what I would call an object of lesser importance. Do you understand what I mean by that?
I haven't a clue.
So so let's go back to the lighthouse scenario. You might have your lighthouse to the right.
Okay.
But you also might have a nice rock or some sort of foreground to the left, which wouldn't be as prominent as the lighthouse, but it's also just putting something in there to give it another element in the image, but it's not taking away the focus of the main subject, which is your lighthouse, as we're calling it.
Okay.
If we go back to our 2 mile gate image, when we will create that image, you know, a lot of people will take that photograph and just have the jetty, but if we zoom out, we now all of a sudden frame it with the trees on either side.
Correct. Frame within a frame.
Yeah. Frame within a frame, which is your lesser subject filling the space.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay? I think you were going off. At first I was there, man, this is getting too technical now already, and I don't understand a word of it. But yes, now
I actually kind of, I start, yeah.
Makes sense now.
I'm starting to give myself a bit of a headache there when I start talking like that. It's fairly intelligent for me. But I suppose the other one is leading lines, okay, is quite simple. And, you know, there's one image that I'm looking forward to seeing from Darren when he comes back, because he spoke about it a lot before he went away. And that was the road. Do you remember him talking about this famous road?
Yeah, the one in the cell panel, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing that, and that would be a typical leading line image, because that road is bringing you through the image from bottom straight through to the top.
Okay.
So that would be another element.
Do you know, actually, I did a shoot a week ago, last week, for a musician from Six Mile Bridge, Jarrah Donnell. Absolute fantastic singer. I'd really encourage any of you to go onto his Facebook page, Jarrah Donnell Music, and this guy can sing, man. He is so good. He's got all these kind of guest singers like Emma Langford. She recently just won an award in Dublin, but I'm getting way off topic here now. But so I did a photograph shoot for him, right, that he needed for promotional reasons. And again, I'm going to use leading lines here to make this picture stand out. So what I have him is, I have these railings on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side down by the courthouse in Limerick. And what I did is I literally got down on my belly on the ground and I shot with the 7200. So I tried to compress the whole scene as well at the same time.
Yes.
And then I had him standing in the middle with his hands in his pockets and his guitar case off to the right-hand side. And the second I took that picture, I knew this picture is awesome. Absolutely awesome. And it just goes to show that leading lines just aren't just for landscape photography. They're for portrait photography also. They're bringing your eyes into the main subject matter in the middle of the photograph.
That's excellent. And then you've balanced, like we were talking about the elements there, you've balanced your elements there by including him.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I didn't even know
it. That's exactly. Yeah. And that's just down to your experience and creativity.
Yeah.
Because it all comes down to creativity at the end of the day. The other then is got your symmetry and patterns. Not something I would do a lot. Okay, but it's another great way to use them to break. It just increases the tension and focal point of some scenes.
Architectures would use that a lot.
Yeah.
Like Inaki, yeah, exactly. Inaki, what's the second name? Very good architecture photographer. I'll put a link up to him on Facebook. He's very good. But he would use all those symmetries and patterns.
Yeah, exactly. That's good. Now, I don't use them a lot, but I have seen them. The viewpoint is something that we've spoken an awful lot about on previous podcasts, and that's like basically your perspective? Am I saying the right word? Yeah. How you change your perspective where you're shooting from high up, low down, as you said, on your belly.
Mm-hmm.
So by getting down your belly, you just change your whole perspective of that particular image. And I have two lovely dogs, and you have a lovely dog there. When I'm taking a photograph of my dog, I try to get down in line eye level with my dog. Changes the whole thing completely. So it's good to change your viewpoint.
So if you were to change your viewpoint, basically what we're trying to do is what I'm thinking here now, it could be totally wrong, is change the viewpoint that you and I would see every day. So if we're looking at flowers from
above,
above the way we stand all the time, they look normal. They look, they're flowers. But if you, like I said, get down your belly and shoot the underside of the flower, it's different.
Yep.
So it's more appealing to the viewer. So it's like... what's that?
That's a
law in economics where if you eat one Kinder Bueno, it's lovely. You eat the second Kinder Bueno, it's yuck. It's okay, but it's not as nice as the first one.
I don't know what economics class you've done.
This is weird. Yeah.
I didn't even know you'd done economics in school.
Yeah, I failed it. So I failed economics. This is just making it worse and worse.
I didn't even know you went to school. Come here. No, I think I know what you're saying. No, that's a really, really good example, because if you do shoot a flower, and I've shot this lovely landscape image before, and I got right down and I was focused on this daisy, one of these big wild daisies, and after I took the shot, the amount of stuff that was going on beyond that daisy, colors down so low,
yeah,
okay. You know, the grasses and everything coming around it, but you don't see it when you're up high. Yeah, it's a good example, even though you try to use your economics to help you. I think we'll move on.
Dude, please, fast. It's worse than getting.
So, depth in an image as well.
I like this one. I like the idea of this. Go on.
Okay, go on. You give me this, and don't use an economics example on this one.
Okay.
Depth of an image. If you're shooting a landscape image, what would we mean by depth?
So in my theory of depth in an image is kind of like layers, layers in an image.
Yes.
So I'll go to an example. I went to Isle of Skye last year with Bernard. BG, big shout out to you, buddy. So we took it to a place called Quirin. So in the distance, we had this kind of, I'll have to post on Facebook page because it's very hard to describe. So it's kind of like these mountains, right? And they're kind of going up and down like in a graph, right? Kind of sloping up and down. And right behind it, there was another ones, but the mist was covering them. And then beyond then that, you could see another few, but then the mist was even covering them even more. So there's layers upon layers of mountains, one behind the other. And then for a sense of scale then, and we were only tiny now in this as well, me holding a GoPro and Bernard's, I don't know, God knows what he was doing behind me, but it just gave it a sense of scale. So I got Ian Caruthers to take the picture, but I set up all the composition, everything how I wanted. So all I had to do was press the button. But the depth in an image would build the story itself on the image. I'm probably not explaining as good as I am, but that's what I love, depth in an image. And it's not your typical landscape image that you're going to get, and it's far more impactful at the end of the day, I find.
Yeah. Basically, you got a foreground, a middle ground, and a background.
I did well, so, to describe it.
Yeah. You did. I actually took an image down in Clarny during our last snow there in February, and I won't lie, I was going for this lovely old bare tree. It was nice, so my pure focus was on that. Again, it was the rule of thirds. The tree was to the right. Took the shot, but came home and looked at it, and it came out well. But then what I realised was I had a lot of depth because I had the tree, and then behind the tree we had the burnt out grass, the greeny kind of browny grass, and then behind that there was a green hill. But behind that then there was the mountains covered in snow. Cool. So I had the different tones going right through the image, and it was like gave a lot of depth. But I didn't shoot the image for the depth. I shot it for the tree. And they all came together afterwards, so it's nice. Yeah, so depth is a huge thing in particularly landscape photography.
Yeah, I agree. And in portraits as well, because you're shooting a shallow depth of field for a lovely model. Like even the image, to say, with Jer that I talked about outside the courthouse, there's depth in that as well, because, like I said, shooting a shallow depth of field in the foreground is kind of melting away, and then it's coming into focus and it's melting away in the background again. So, yeah, it's interesting, isn't
definitely.
It?
Definitely. It is. Then the other obvious one, and it's one that I would use a lot, is framing your image. We spoke about that earlier.
Yeah, that's definitely up your street. Like the majority of our images, there is a lot of frame within a frame. Me, not so much. And I do like, don't get me wrong, I love it when I see it. Yeah. And I love doing it, but it's just something that I should do more. And I love looking at your work. It's very inspirational. And
that's yours, Dad.
I really should take more heed of it and use it for myself, to be honest, yeah.
That's very kind of you, but framing would be, it would be something I would look for an awful lot through the viewfinder before I take an image. Adds to it. Cropping as well. I have shot images before, and it's only afterwards when I cropped in on it when I came home that I realised, oh, that's better. Okay, so if you can crop it when you're taking the shot, great, as in you zoom in your image. So you really bring your subject to the foreground. And then obviously experimentation. You know, if you experiment with your compositions, everything we mentioned above, you get more creative. And I think the more creative you become, the better a photographer you become. The better of your photographer you become, the more enjoyable it is. And that's the way I would sum up compositions. Learn the rules, break the rules, get creative, and enjoy it. One thing that kind of prompted me to discuss this, to two reasons actually. One, we'll explain later on in the show. But the other reason was we have a listener, Adam Russell, who's been very interactive with us on our Facebook page. He had a vlog there recently. I don't know if you saw it there, Dermot. And he was, I think it was Glasgow. I think it was close to where he's from. Maybe he'll correct me on our Facebook page. But during his vlog, he was walking out in these wellies. I actually was waiting for him to drop underneath the water the way he's walking the wellies, okay, into this lake. And I didn't know what was coming, but there was a boathouse, and again, I'm sure he'll be happy to tell us about this boathouse and where it is. Lovely boathouse. But I suppose on the vlog, looking at it through the video, you couldn't really see a photograph. Does that make sense? I couldn't see where an image was going to come from. Now, he could. And then to cut a long story short, he showed the image that he took at that moment. Obviously, he used a long exposure. But he used an old broken tree, a broken branch in his foreground, which brought you straight into the image, which to the more to the left of the image, and then the boathouse was up to the right. So from a compositional point of view, I thought that was excellent.
Yeah.
And you could walk past it and not see it, but he knew from obviously through his experience and practice that, you know, if you scan a scene, look, use the elements that are around, bring them together, you will pull off some sort of image. And he used his composition there very much so. And maybe Adam, if you're listening to this, you might share that image on our Facebook page so we can see it.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'd love to see that now. I'm sure he probably had to stick in his back bag when he went out of it.
Well, must have been a big bag because it was a big bloody stick. Now, Dermot, there's another couple of rules. And I know, you know what? I'm not going to go into these too much because I know of these rules, but I know I actually use these a lot, but I would never go out with the intentions of saying I have to follow these rules, okay? Apart from the rule of thirds, we've got the golden ratio.
Oh, my God.
You've probably come across this more so than me because I know you've done your studies in college for your photography.
Yeah.
Your golden ratio and then your golden triangles and spirals. Yeah.
John, can I say something now before we go any further? I had to study all these in college. I will admit that. Yes, they are all very, very boring and very intelligent all at the same time. But if you ask me to tell you what they are, I will not have a clue, because the second I learned them and got them out and whatever I had to do in college, I just ignored them after that.
I know.
So that's my disclaimer. Done.
The easiest way to explain, I suppose, to explain the golden ratio is it's very similar to the rule of thirds, whereas you do split your screen into 9 segments, but say roughly 3/8 of the frame above on your, if you look at your LCD screen, your middle section will be smaller than your top and bottom section. So in other words, the 3 squares going across the top are the same size as the 3 squares going across the bottom reasonably. But the 3 across the middle are
skinny.
Smaller.
They're skinny ones, yeah.
Yeah, skinnier, exactly. Yeah. And I suppose the golden triangles and spirals, they're used more for curves more than leading lines.
Yeah.
Now again, I have used that. And the way you would look at that, if you imagined your LCD screen or your viewfinder and you drew a line from the bottom left to the top right, so you're splitting your screen with one line, diagonal line from one corner to the other. And then in the bottom right-hand corner, if you drew a line up to meet that line in a 90 degree, that'll give you 1, 2, or 3 sections, like 3 triangles. But you're composing your image to the bottom right triangle. It's a little bit complicated.
No, John, what? Are you bored of reading these out already?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because
this just tells you how... it's another 2 euros.
Beep! If I was bringing somebody out on a workshop around that, I wouldn't be saying this is your golden triangles and your spirals rules.
No way. They're so complicated that you lose people by trying to explain what they are.
Exactly. And that's why I said we'd leave them to the end, because I think it's important to know they are there. And if people want to kind of study them, and if you want to have done good maths for some of them, because a lot of them goes into, I don't know whether. And so we'll brush past that nice and quickly. Yeah, we agree on that, the both of us.
Done.
I think the other composition rules are good, as we spoke about. But listen, we're going to pause here. We're going to move it on, and we're going to hear from our sponsor, and I will talk to you in a moment.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
And welcome back to the Irish Photography Podcast. Dermot, I hope you're still with me.
No, I'm gone. Good luck. Your whole ratio thing just bored the crap out of me. I'm not coming back.
we'll have to put it to the test another day. Do you know what? I'm excited. I'm excited about the next topic for today, because I wanted to talk to you about the last photograph you took this weekend. So what you've done this weekend and what the last photograph was. Now, I know where you were.
Yeah.
But a lot of the listeners won't know where you were, okay? And I want to hear about Dusty, and you can explain who Dusty is. So take the floor there, Dermot.
Okay, so Dusty's my new girlfriend. She's lovely. She's really nice.
Yeah.
And feels very rubbery. Right, this is getting weird already. Yep. Dusty is a dolphin that lives... Well, I don't know if she lives in Doolin, but she's there a while anyway. And finally, I can tick it off my bucket list. I finally got to do a dive with a dolphin. And it was absolutely amazing, John. I couldn't ask for better conditions. And it was such a humbling moment to spend so much time with a mammal of the sea. And she is so kind, caring, and very sociable. So I loved absolutely every minute of it. And even my dive buddy, has footage of Dusty behind me as I was photographing these crabs on a reef, kind of like a reef wall about 18 meters deep. And I had my back turned to her. I think she got annoyed at me, the fact I wasn't playing with her enough. So she came along behind me and started nudging the back of my air tank as in turn around and play with me.
No way.
Yes.
That's mad.
Yeah, yeah.
That's class. And was she that friendly?
Oh, she was absolutely brilliant. She was so nice. And I've heard stories before that, be careful, they can attack and whatever. But no, man, she was... so pleasing, and she was she loved the camera, she loved to please, and she kept on coming back. Like, she came up to us at the pier in Doolin and played with us there for a while, and then we got on the speedboat and we drove out to the Cliffs of Moher, where we dived at the base of it, and she followed us the whole way out. It follows the whole out and dived around with us and went around from diver to diver, spent a bit of time with all of us, and then came the whole back in with us then after that, you know.
No way. And that was a good spin out for her.
Yeah, yeah. Well actually, from the pier of Doolin, it's actually not too far, especially in a speedboat. Yeah.
But to follow you, like, yeah, that's quite cool.
It was amazing. It was just, even when I told my father, because my father is a scuba diver as well, when I told my dad about it when I got home, he was so jealous. He was gutted he didn't go.
But you know, she is there a while, because I have heard of her over the last couple of years being there. So she's a bit like the Claire Fungi, is it?
Kerry. Down Kerry, Fungi. Yeah. Yeah. But I think Fungi,
so it's a bit like the Claire version.
I think Fungi has been replaced about 20 times, you know.
possibly. Maybe it's dusty on the holiday.
I don't know.
But come here, from a photography point of view, I got to fire a couple of questions at you. What did you use? Did you get it? I know I saw the video footage, but did you get a photograph of her?
No. I had a bit of a... I didn't have a problem. I just made... And I didn't make a mistake. It's just the way it happened. So I had two dives on that day. So the first morning dive, I brought a 15mm fisheye lens with me to get a few kind of really wide-angle shots under the water of other scuba divers. They were my models, so to speak, for that dive. That's what I was concentrating on, is photographing other divers. I had no interest in photographing macro photography at the time. And I said I'd do that in the second dive. So I was getting a few over-under shots. So an under-over shot would be some in the water and some out of the water. And a few portraits, like I said. Very happy with some of those images. And then we came in. And then I changed my housing over, the port over. So I changed that into my macro lens and put in the macro port itself. And just as we're getting into water, there was Dusty. So in order for me to change back to my fisheye lens would have taken me the bones of 8 minutes, maybe in total, 10 minutes max, to change it. But to get up,
you just got excited.
Yeah, you know, I did go pro there, and I was happy just to play with her. I didn't want, like, I would have loved to photograph her. I'm sure I'll get it another time, hopefully. But a shout out to my DO, my one of my best dive buddies, Mike Ort. He's American, lovely guy. You can check him out on Instagram at HCI Diver. He got an absolute fantastic shot, an over-under shot of Dusty as she's at the pier. So he's got her under the water, and then he's got the boat, and then all these big crowds of people up on the pier up the top as well. So amazing photograph.
Will you be able to share that with us?
Yeah, I'll get him to put it on the Facebook page. It's unreal.
That's class. I bet you're itching to go back out.
Yeah, I would have done a third dive if possible, but it was getting late and people are getting tired, and I think we just all wanted to go home at that stage.
And I saw the footage, the video footage from underneath. It was very clear.
That's a GoPro 6.
Very, very clear.
Yeah, and I didn't even edit the video. I just put it together clip by clip, but I didn't go in and change the curves and all that. I was just too lazy. I just wanted to get it out in the open, because it was just amazing. I was ecstatic. Yeah.
And was that, did you get that footage from in around the pier or out by the cliffs?
Boat.
That particular boat? Yeah. Really good.
Yeah, yeah.
What was it like out the cliffs, by the way?
It's totally different. Totally different. Yeah. Where our first dive site was a bit closer to Doolin than the actual Cliffs of Moher. And it's called Caroline's Crack is the dive site.
Oh, Jesus. Poor Caroline, huh?
Poor Caroline. Oh man, you should hear some of the names for dive sites in Ireland. You know, and
right? So you got Caroline's Crack near Doolin.
Yeah, and there's a Tony's Crack in Kilkee Bay, which is a Tony's very good dive site. Our second dive site, wait for this one. Yeah. And I don't think we actually got to the site, but it's very close. It's called the Chinaman's Hole. I'm not lying to you. You can ask my DO, the dive officer. Right. He'll tell you.
So the Chinaman's Hole, is that near Caroline's Crack?
It's a bit further up from Caroline's Crack.
Very good.
But the dive sites there,
that sounds interesting.
They are very interesting, you know. And when it comes to scuba diving, as cheesy as it sounds, it's a total different world. And it's... I'm still kind of new to scuba diving, as... I'm only diving, what, maybe 14, 15 months now. But I would be more of an advanced rookie, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And I when I do, you know yourself, whenever I do something, I don't do it by halves. I literally dive in, excuse the pun.
Yeah, yeah. But you're doing really, really well in it. Like, you don't look like a guy who's only been that little time at it. I said this to you before, fast forward 2 years, it's going to be exciting times for you, I think.
Yeah.
Doing the water stuff.
And I'm starting, only starting to get the photography side of it, starting to get a bit down. I've a lot to learn, don't get me wrong, but I'm getting there.
Maybe someday we'll have a guest speaker on who specializes in that area as well, and you'd also learn from him too.
Yeah, there's a guy in Ireland, Nigel Moiter. He's fantastic, and I'd love to get him on. Talked to him only a small bit on Facebook. So, yeah, he's very interesting.
Hopefully, if you're listening, Nigel, that you might come on board and chat to us. We'd all love to hear from you, as would everybody else.
Yeah.
So that was a good weekend for you.
Yeah, so come here. Tell me. Enough about me. I know I'm amazing, but what did you do?
I had a busy weekend. As you know, I coached the Irish over 35 men's field hockey team, and we were up in Belfast. It was good, but while I was up there, I brought the family with us, and we also went on up to the Giants Causeway, and it was good. It was good, but Dermot, the crowds was unreal. Now, what date are we? What? That was the 28th, the 29th of October. I thought that tourism would back off a little bit. The place was loaded. I couldn't get a shot.
Mobbed.
I got one or two shots, try to get a bit creative. But I didn't really have the patience at the Giants Causeway, but I plan to go back.
So what was the weather like? Was the weather playing ball like?
The weather was only okay. There wasn't enough going on in the sky. I think at this time of the year, I think it's more of a sun-setting spot, like, you know. But having said that, I will go back, but you would need to go back either first thing in the morning or very late in the evening. I was there 4 years ago with my two sons, and we actually went in April, and there was not a sinner there. And that's where I got my first shot at the Giants Causeway, and I actually kind of thought it was going to be like that again, but how was I wrong? But I suppose on the way home, we took a spin. I wanted to go back to the Dark Hedges because I was only there once before. Those of you who don't know what the Dark Hedges were, it's a famous road up the north where these kind of really unusual trees are, and it's featured in the Game of Thrones. It's quite a cool road, but because it's Game of Thrones, it attracts an awful lot of tourism. But when I was there a few years ago, it was very, very quiet. I got one shot, it was grand, but I wasn't really into my photography journey back then, and I was itching to go back to get another image. But, oh my God, I mean, the road is closed for a start, which is good in one way. But, Jesus, Dermot, I don't know. There must have been about 200 people on the road. Like, can you imagine that?
You're kidding me. 200 people?
Must have been, at least. Walking up and down the thing. Yeah, unreal.
That'd drive me mad. I don't know if I'd be able to.
I know. No, but yeah, but this is where I'm going, right? I was thinking, how am I going to get a photograph here? And I got disappointed in myself because it was also late in the evening. So there was nice light there, that nice soft light. And I was thinking, how am I going to get a shot here? I set the camera up in the middle of the road and I took out my 7200 to compress the image. And when I looked back into the viewfinder, I thought, oh, the trees looked amazing in it. But because there's so many people going up and down, I said, okay, let's think outside the box here now. I went for movement. I went for long exposure to try and get a bit of movement of the people walking through the image, which worked out quite well. I also increased the length of the exposure, so there'd be a lot of movement, which cleared the pathway, in other words. So the longer I was exposing for, the more ghostly those people were coming. So there was less people on the road. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand where I'm going with that?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. I do it all the time.
What I didn't do was I could have put on a six-stopper, or even longer, and shot it for about 3 or 4 minutes and cleared the path completely, but I didn't have time to do that. My daughter was with me, she was freezing. But I did take an image, and I think I sent you on an image earlier of what it was like.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, and at first when I was looking at it, I said, man, this is weird.
Weird. And you could see the people in it. But you know me, I have this kind of arty side in my blood, I suppose, with my cousins and my uncles being artists. And lately...
Simon.
Simon's super. And he's been very inspirational to me, particularly in the last couple of years. When I was taking the image, I said, okay, I'm going to edit an image the way I've been editing a couple of recent ones. And I sent you on the recent one, I think. me just see.
No, I've got the first one that you sent me. There's like eight people maybe kind of in the foreground and they're blurry. It wouldn't be my thing.
No, but
you know,
you had to get it. I got a wee bit creative with it then as well afterwards. And I'm having trouble here on my Wi-Fi trying to send you off this image. So what it does, I looked at the image, thought about it, and thinking that, okay, the edit that
I got it. Yeah.
Changed the edit. Open that on your big screen. Tell me what you think.
Jesus, mother of God. It looks terrifying. Do you ever see that program called Stranger Things?
Yes. That's what it's like, isn't it?
That's what it just straight, immediately just kind of stuck out with me. No. It is. Do you know what? It's 10 times nicer than the original image.
Yeah.
I thought the first one was...
No, the first one's just a shot.
Bad, but... Yeah, it's more of a grab shot than anything else, but you did it justice with this whole kind of
flick through
pasterly.
Yeah,
it's pasterly even a word.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, flick through them first, edit and unedit there, and you'll see it. But that was when I was taking that shot. I was thinking, okay, there's a lot of people here, but I'm not going to let that put me off. And that's when I think it's important to get creative, both in thinking of the moment and how you might create something different at the moment, but also how you might create it afterwards as well to make something out of nothing. And I think I've done it with that image, so I'm actually quite happy. And I have another image as well.
I actually love it, genuinely. Yeah. And I'm not a lover of this kind of editing. Mm. How do you do it?
I can't pretend anything like that. I know, it is quite cool. No, it's quite cool. It's just basically it's an oil effect. It's an oil filter. Okay. But
is that in Photoshop or Lightroom?
It's in Photoshop, but then I tweak an awful lot to do with the hues and saturations as well, just to kind of change the colour scheme on it.
Yeah, I love the warmer tone in the second one.
Yeah.
In the oil painting one, I love the warm tone to it. It gives this... I don't know what's the word I'm looking for.
Do you think the trees pop more?
Definitely, 100%.
Now you can overdo that. That affects. You can certainly overdo it. Look, it's a little bit like HDR. You can overdo a HDR, and you can overdo that effect as well. That effect is right at the minimum. If you were to go from 0 to 10%, that's about 1%.
Okay. Yeah. So, you did it. You did it justice. Now I have to say. Yeah.
So
well done. Well done.
And then the other image I have, which I haven't edited yet, it went for a longer exposure, and there's a lot less people on it. A lot less people in, so looking forward to getting hands on that. So that was my...
Tell me this, Sean, before we come away from this topic. How many other photographers were there, and were they kind of like fighting for jockeying for position with you?
There was no... Okay, well, how do you say this without sounding big-headed? There's no other photographers there kind of with their tripods and their big cameras. Looked like landscape photographers there when I was there. There was full of tourists on my shoulder, but they're... with their cameras over my shoulder trying to get the same image as me. It's quite funny, right? I took a lovely portrait of my wife and my daughter, and this gentleman came up. He was an American guy, and he was standing behind my shoulder. I didn't know what he wanted, like. And I said, "Are you okay?" And he said, "I just want to see the photograph at the end." I said, "No problem." So I positioned Elaine and Jessica, and we got this position. And I shot it 2.8 on the 70-200, so I really compressed them. And The trees behind them really faded out, like we're talking earlier in our compositions with the depth. And I just looked at him, and next minute he gave me a slap on the back, right? Now, I mean like a thump, and walked off. And I looked at him, and he went,
weird.
Yeah, he just like hit me on the back and went, oh, like that. Or more or less to say, oh, I wish I could do that. You know, that's what it was. It was a compliment slap on the back. You know, and I thought it was quite funny. But moving off, people will know, listening to this episode, that the Game of Thrones, the road is actually closed off. There's a big sign closed off. Okay? Now, you've never been there. I had my tripod on that, ready to go, and a car comes along. Up through.
Wow.
Yeah, and tries to drive through it.
Doesn't care.
Now, me being a little bit stubborn, I wasn't moving, like, you know. But that wasn't stopping him. He went up and he went around to the right of me, and off he went through 100 or 200 people. Now, how ignorant can you get? Yeah, ruined it for a lot of people. But that's us, Dermot. That was a lovely, lovely topic. Enjoyed that.
And I will. I'll post the fun. dusty video on the Facebook page.
And I'll post that image as well.
I'll share a link to it. Yeah.
Great.
All right. So,
so that's going to bring us on to our VSP for this episode.
And the VSP. What's that?
The very solid product. Really?
Oh yeah, I love this part. It's one of my favorite parts.
Really?
Of the show.
Okay. Thank God for that. Because
to be fair,
thank God for that, because I'll probably hand this over to you. But I know you've recently bought a ball head for your tripod, and it's the same one that I use. So if you want to give me your thoughts on it, I've been using it a while. So give me your thoughts on that. Somebody who's been using it for the last few weeks.
Okay, so the ball head itself, it's the X Pro ball head. It's the MHX Pro BHQ2. I know it's a lot of letters, with the 200 plate. So the 200 plate is the more generic plate that Manfrotto would use the majority of the time. They have a few other ones, but this is the more generic one. It's very, very easy to use the ball head itself. You can level your composition precisely, reducing the post-production work. Like we said about the horizon line and all that, like, it's very easy to get your tripod in place. It's a lightweight magnesium body, and it's got a triple locking system. So the triple locking system is one for if you're doing panoramics.
Yeah.
Panoramas. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, panoramas. Panoramics.
At the bottom. And it's got the degrees then on it as well at the bottom, which is awesome. So you know how many degrees you're moving on each image. Then the second locking system is for the ball head itself.
Which is absolutely solid.
It is very solid. Yeah.
It's the slightest lock, and it's locked in big time.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then the third locking plate then is for the locking the plate itself.
Yeah.
So it's fairly very, very secure ball head. It's not too light, but it's light compared to other ones. So it's good. It's strong. It's not going to fault in with you over time.
Yeah. Do you have a price on that, Dermot? I couldn't get a price on that earlier.
Bear with me. I'll get a price for it by the end of the day.
Yeah, if we don't have it, we can throw it up on our Facebook page. But out of 10, 1 to 10, what would you give that?
Now, I have to say one or two things about it first before I give it a score. Because I modified my own one.
Oh, really?
And you can... So you don't have to stick with the actual Manfrotto head itself. So I wanted to use an L bracket. And in order to get an L bracket for the Manfrotto one, you have to get a whole new kind of head.
Okay.
So what I did is I brought a Sun Photo, what do you call it? Sun Photo plate bracket. Am I making any sense here?
No, you are.
So I replaced the locking plate at the top, right? It's just a little screw, that's all. And you take it out, and then you put the L bracket holder. That's the word I was looking for. L bracket holder in on top of that. So then I went away and bought a three-legged thing, L bracket. In orange, of course, because it's my favorite color. And then that sits on top of that, then so I can lock it in either vertically or horizontally. I just change it around whenever I want. So I can put it in horizontally to get the perfect panorama photograph. Or if I just wanted my normal standard kind of landscape image, I put it down horizontally.
Cool.
So I love it. I absolutely love it. And it's changed my photography for the better.
Yeah, it's changed mine as well. I find it great. And if I was to give it 1 to 10, I don't know, I'd be giving it up to 9 or a 10, or I'd give it 9 because they say nothing's perfect. But I was one of the best things I bought in recent years was that ball head.
I'm going to give it a bold 10 out of 10.
Good. It is, it's worth it. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. I think Darren uses it as well. I think he does.
Darren has the slightly better model, apparently.
Does he?
I think that's what he said. I'm not too sure. Almost certain of it.
Yeah.
Now there is here. I'm looking at the. I think I have it here on Whelan's, and the Manfrotto 054 magnesium ball head with the Q2 quick release, which I think it is hit ball head quick two. Yeah, and it is coming in at €205 in Whelan's.
Whelan's. Okay, so it's probably similar in other Irish photography retail stores, but it's worth that. I know it's expensive, but you do pay for what you get, and I would recommend it.
How long have you got it?
I have mine about 3 years now, I think.
Okay.
Whether it's
and it hasn't degraded over time.
No, it looks like that's coming out of the box. Whether it's the exact same model, I'm not too sure, but look, it's probably more or less the same, but no, it looks like as if it's just taken out of the box. Is that you here beside me? Yeah.
Cool. Cool. That's perfect.
Brilliant.
Sounds good, John. That sounds great.
No bother. I'm gonna hand you over to the next segment because you're becoming our news reader now.
Yeah. So we've some interesting news in the photography world this week, John. Here we go. I have my notes here. So DJI have just released the new Mavic 2 Enterprise. So what this is, it looks like an insect.
Wow.
The drone, it's the Mavic 2 Pro or Zoom. It looks like it, but with the special lights on top. So it's like an insect, but it does the work of a rescue dog. The DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise comes equipped with bolt-on accessories that make it ideal for search and operations and reconnaissance. So you have a beacon light for warning people or that there's something like an accent or something. And then you have did I read somewhere that it has kind of a speaker that you can connect to it to tell people, we know you're here, it's safe, we're on the way.
Wow.
So that's something very interesting.
What's it called again?
The DJI Mavic 2 Enterprise. So I applaud DJI for building this, and I think it's something that's brilliant. It's going to be great for the police and the fire brigades moving forward
to
save people's lives.
Yeah. That's fantastic. It's great to see them thinking outside the box.
Digital Camera Magazine, they have just released their entries for Photographer of the Year 2019, and it's now open for entries. And the best thing about it, John, is that it's free. You don't have to pay like some other competitions. So it's fantastic. Anyone can enter.
Brilliant.
And not only that, for Photographer of the Year, they have Young Photographer of the Year.
Very good.
Now, there is guidelines to that. You have to be under the age of 25.
Oh.
So that excludes you. But I'm still allowed to win it because I'm only 21.
You are, yeah.
Okay, so going on to the next topic. Yang Nuo. One of China's photography industry's best well known for knockoffs of Canon and Nikon camera gear have decided to announce that they are developing a mirrorless camera.
Oh my God. Now, I thought you were going to say they were bringing out another flash because that's all I would really know them for. But they're bringing out a mirrorless camera. Really?
A mirrorless camera. Now, they're bold. I'll give them that.
You didn't read that in Waterford Whispers or anything like that, no?
No, I wasn't. And you know what? Their flashes are fantastic. They're unbelievable.
They are brilliant.
Their lenses, from a bit of research, their lenses aren't as good.
Right.
There's a lot of chromatic aberration, a few other kind of missed things wrong with them, but look, they're cheap, but they're grand.
Well, let's watch this
But
space
the camera... Yeah, I'd watch the space, but I will never, ever buy it. I can promise you that now.
No, do you know what?
Moving on.
I think you will. I know when you will. You will, if it's a good price. Go on anyway, move on.
This gets weird, okay? So, reading a report on petapixel.com, AI have generated a portrait sells for €381,000, which would be $432,000 at an auction. So basically, the AI, which is artificial intelligence, was fed 15,000 portraits painted between the 14th and the 20th centuries and found on the online art encyclopedia WikiArt. The AI then learned the rules of painting portraits by studying the features of all the paintings. After days of learning, it then used what it learned to create a new portrait itself. And the thing looks like my 5-year-old child have painted a picture on a canvas. And it was even bold enough to sign its own name down the bottom corner. And it signed this, and I quote, M-I-N, min, G, max, D-E-X, bracket log D X bracket 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 E Z. So it's like almost a code at the bottom of it. So it signed its own name at the bottom, like Picasso or something like that. But that's its name. The AI. And the painting it's not a painting, it's a picture done in artificial intelligence. It's terrible looking, but it actually sold for €381,000 in an auction.
Wow.
Are you mad?
Wow. That is mad news.
Yeah, so that's our news for this week, guys. I hope you enjoyed it. And now we'll move on to our next quick segment. And Darren's failed name of the film bag will not be used. You have voted. It has been said.
The people have spoken.
The people have spoken. As much as we love Darren, and we do, sorry, buddy, you have failed in this segment. So for now, it's just a listener's mailbag. So we had a mail from Jerry from Waterford, and he asks, what's the best Canon full frame camera, as he is thinking of upgrading from a crop sensor. So Jerry, I'm going to give you my advice. I think if you're going into the second hand market, I would buy a Canon 6D. It's cheap, cheerful, and it's a full frame camera, and there's a lot of them out there on the market second hand. I just bought one myself recently. If you're going buying something brand new, I would probably come in with a Canon 6D Mark II as well. Also, it's affordable, very good camera. You're going to get your naysayers saying it's not good enough, but I actually think it's a fabulous, fabulous camera. Yeah. And it's cheap and cheerful and affordable, especially getting into your full frame market for starters. What would be your one, John?
Yeah, I would second that. I went from my crop sensor to a full frame. I went to the 6D and I haven't looked back. I love it. I still have it. I still use it. And I'm still getting the shots that you see today through it. And I'm delighted with it. Yep.
Good. So I hope, Jerry, I hope that answers your question. Very good. And we have a foreigner question from, I'm going to pronounce this now in Spanish because I did a Spanish course there a few years back. Lucia from Barcelona.
Oh, very good.
So Lucia asks, how long does it take to become a professional photographer?
Oh, gosh.
Now, that's
a hard one question, to answer.
It's like asking how long is a piece of rope.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert at anything. And at the end of the day, I don't know if you even want to be a professional photographer because it's very hard and very stressful job. And someone can spend so many hours at something and still be crap at it. Yeah. As harsh as that sounds.
I think it's something that, you know, if you really want it, you have to go after it. You know, if you're in a position to go after it, go for it. But it will, to become a professional photographer, I think you have to be willing to make loads of mistakes. You know, attend workshops that are run by professionals and maybe look at a particular, try and draw down that particular area that you want to specialize in. Like, do you want to be a professional landscape photographer? Do you want to be a professional wedding photographer, a portrait photographer? And then, you know, go learn from the best in your area. And there's plenty of people in the areas, I'm sure over in Barcelona as well, that can give plenty of tuition and so on. And take it from there and just do, you know, step by step. Crawl before you can walk. And I'm sure if you really want it, that I won't pronounce, is it, what's the name again of the lady?
Lucia.
Lucia. Lucia. Be interesting to hear back from her. In a few months' time.
So,
yeah, no, we also had an email from Mary from Dublin, and she actually asked about composition. So hopefully the first topic there answered that question, Mary, because Mary just bought a camera recently, and as one area that she was looking to learn was how to create more impact on her landscape images. So hopefully those few tips discussed at the beginning of the podcast will help. That's it.
Perfect. Actually, I forgot about Mary's question. Yeah. That's funny you said that, Jesus. So thank you very much to Jerry, Luthia and Mary from Dublin. We appreciate the mails and the lovely emails that we get from some of our listeners in support of the podcast. So if you've got any question for our mailbag, listener's mailbag, please email your questions to the Irish Photography Podcast @gmail.com.
Yep, perfect. That was a great podcast, Dermot. I really, really enjoyed it. And we will wrap it up, I think. Our next time we chat, we may have Darren back with us, and we also hope to have a special guest coming on soon as well. So plenty to come in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to wrap it
up. Perfect stuff, buddy.
Nice chatting to you, pal, and look it, we will talk to you soon. All right, take care.
Hey-o.
Slán.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.